Hello, my name is Lily, and today I will be reading the Salem News. This is the Friday, February 20th, 2026 edition, and we are starting off with our first article written by Michael McHugh. It's titled, Pangallo Eyes Local Sales Tax for Revenue. Mayor Dominic Pangallo says revenues from a local sales tax would allow the city to shift some of the burden of funding municipal services and projects from homeowners into its growing visitor economy. Legislation recently filed by State Senator Joan Lovely, Democrat from Salem, and State Representative Manny Cruz, Democrat from Salem, would, if approved, allow local governments to adopt a local option sales tax up to 5% on top of the state's current 6.25% levy. Cruz filed the bill in response to a request from Pangallo, who wants to put the issue before the Salem City Council later this year, but needs approval first from the state legislature to change tax laws. The point, Pangallo said, is to try to shift some of the tax burden for funding services that the community relies on, as well as building a new high school or covering the costs of the visitor economy and its local impacts onto the visitors themselves. Quote, we're hoping for some constructive partnership with the legislature in allowing cities and towns to have more autonomy and flexibility to use these tools to provide the services and the investments that our residents need and deserve, he said. While home rule petitions to increase local excise tax on items like, or taxes on items like cannabis, private parking, hotel and lodging, and meals have stalled in the legislature, Pangallo said, Salem has been left to rely on either asking for more local aid or asking more from its property taxpayers. Raising property taxes in itself is limited by Proposition 2.5, forcing the city to think more creatively about funding. Quote, the services that we rely on and our ability to invest in things we care about, such as safe communities, streets and sidewalks, public schools, parks and playgrounds, these costs are increasing more than 2.5% per year, Pangallo said. In Salem, we have over 3.5 million tourists a year that come here, and we capture what we can through existing meals and lodging excise taxes. But if someone comes here and isn't staying in a hotel room or buying or paying a parking fee, there's very little revenue that's directly coming into city coffers. Massachusetts is one of just 12 states that does not allow a local option sales tax. If the legislation were to pass, Pangallo said he would request the Salem City Council to consider adopting the full 5%. With Salem voters this May facing a debt exclusion override vote to temporarily exceed the limits of Proposition 2.5 in order to pay the city's share for a new high school, Pangallo envisions a scenario in which revenues generated by a local sales tax could significantly reduce the burden on property taxpayers to pay off that bond. Quote, just looking at 2022, a sales tax of 5% would have generated just over $15 million for the city in revenues, which is very close to what the annual debt payment is going to be on the new high school building, he said. Whether or not it would all go towards the debt for the school or provide a portion of the funding, it's a way to leverage a strength that we have, our visitor economy, to provide revenues to fund a critical local need without having to ask our property taxpayers, many of whom are on fixed incomes, he said, noting tax increases also get passed along to tenants. Quote, we definitely need to be cognizant of the burden on taxpayers and take a balanced approach, he said. The health insurance costs, electricity costs, fixed costs, and assessments that the state charges us for the MBTA and other things are all increasing. The affordability challenge that we will face is, Are we shifting those costs more fairly onto visitors, or are we going to have to ask more from property taxpayers? At the same time, Pangalo said the city does need to continue to pursue ways to drive down costs. He pointed to efforts on energy efficiency and decarbonization in new capital projects, and participating in the Group Insurance Commission to stabilize health insurance costs for the city and its employees. Quote, I'm open to every conversation, but we can't keep asking property taxpayers to pay more when we have other tools that other states have utilized successfully in a balanced manner to think more creatively about how we solve these problems, he said. In contrast, John Hurst, president of the Retailers Association of Massachusetts, said the proposed legislation would be damaging for local consumers, small businesses, and the future of any main street where local sales taxes were adopted. Quote, the sales tax is by far the most regressive tax in the books, which disproportionately hits low-income consumers and working families, Hurst said. The sales tax lowers the disposable income of local consumers, which means purchases are either reduced or simply shifted elsewhere. Quote, why would any appliance, furniture, bike, clothing, gift, or jewelry store, or even any restaurant, stay in Salem with high avoidable sales taxes when another Massachusetts community has no local option sales tax, he said. More to the point, why would any consumer pay that much sales tax in Salem, Massachusetts, when they could pay zero sales tax in Salem, New Hampshire? Next is this article by Michael McHugh, titled, Cities Search for Alternatives to Code Red. Salem Peabody residents report numerous problems with emergency alert system. Salem and Peabody officials are exploring alternatives to their Code Red emergency alert systems after residents have reported multiple reliability issues with the service. Since last November, when there was a change in ownership of the company that provides Code Red and a transition to a new platform, both cities have received numerous reports of residents experiencing problems with the service. The most common issue is that residents who are subscribed to the system are not receiving notifications about parking bans, delays in trash pickup, and other citywide alerts. Salem has used Code Red since at least 2013, and the city would only usually receive one or two calls a week from someone who had a problem trying to unsubscribe or get signed on to the system. But now, in just the last week, the city has received close to 30 calls from residents sharing their frustrations with the system. Quote, I am one of those people that was mysteriously unsubscribed when this tradition happened, Mayor Dominic Pangalo said, so I understand the anxiety from people who were trying to navigate what was a confusing moment when you weren't getting information about delays in trash and recycling pickup or parking bans, and it's certainly not an acceptable level of service from this company in my book. Officials say the issues have ranged from subscribers no longer receiving calls to people who have unsubscribed and left the city suddenly receiving calls again, or calls coming through garbled or in a language they hadn't selected when signing up. Quote, some of those issues might be on the cell phone carriers and some of it might be on the system, and it's not entirely clear, Pangalo said. But just the multitude of different issues, most notably with people no longer receiving the notifications, was not acceptable when we're talking about an emergency notification system. Peabody, which has used Code Red for about 14 years, likewise had experienced few issues with the system until very recently, according to Chris Ryder, the mayor's chief of staff. Quote, we were very happy with the system, but we were transferred to a new platform, and the issues have unfortunately been extensive enough that we're looking to make a change, Ryder said. We weren't getting the effectiveness and connectivity rate that we had become accustomed to. Quote, we were getting lots of reports that people were no longer getting calls and felt like they were missing out on important city issues and happenings, he said. Peabody began to first notice problems during the Republic trash workers' strike over the summer when the city relied on Code Red to get information about delays in trash pickup. Quote, I believe that was when the new platform debuted under new ownership. We expected some hiccups and a learning process, but it persisted a little longer than that, and we are in a position where we're going to have to at least go out and look for an alternative, Ryder said. Hamilton, which has used Code Red since 2017, has not noticed any problems with the city, according to town officials. During the most recent winter storm, when the town sent out alerts about the snow emergency, the town did not receive any calls from residents saying the system was not functioning as intended, officials said. Code Red by Crisis 24, the company that operates the emergency alert service, did not respond to a request for comment by press time. Quote, we're looking at options that other communities are using that may have more reliability, but also encourage every resident to make sure that they're opting into other forms of notification that the city puts out, said Pangallo. In addition to Code Red, the city issues emails with the same alerts and announcements posted on the city's homepage at salemma.gov, which residents can sign up for at salemma.gov/list.aspx. The My Salem MA mobile device app is also available to send alerts through push notifications, and the city maintains social media accounts on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, and Nextdoor. During snow emergency parking bans, both cities have blue lights that will flash at major intersections to alert residents to the ban. PBD residents likewise can view real-time news and information posted on the city's website at pbd-ma.gov. In addition to electronic billboards on major highways in the city that the city uses to send out alerts, Mayor Ted Betancourt and the city also maintain social media accounts on Facebook and Twitter. Quote, we feel we need to take quick and decisive steps to look at alternatives, Ryder said. The mayor's objective is to take steps to find an alternative to continue to provide PBD residents and business owners with the information they rely on every day. This next article is written by Christian M. Wade, the State House reporter. It's titled, Republicans Seek Hearings on SNAP Fraud Charges. The state Senate's Republican minority is calling for oversight hearings to investigate allegations of fraud in the state's disbursement of federal SNAP benefits. In a letter to Senator Mark Montigny, chair of the Democratic-controlled Senate Committee on Post-Audit and Oversight, Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr, Republican Gloucester, and the other four members of the caucus call for hearings to investigate, quote, significant and recurring evidence of fraud in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and other public assistance. The GOP lawmakers cited state audits, federal investigations, and news reports based on a whistleblower account that suggested, quote, operational failures within the State Department of Transitional Assistance and that the Healey administration is failing, quote, to adequately protect taxpayer funds and program beneficiaries. 2 weeks ago, federal authorities charged four individuals, including two Venezuelan nationals, in a more than $1 million multi-state SNAP fraud and stolen identity case. Federal prosecutors alleged the men used the stolen personal information of over 100 people to fraudulently obtain SNAP benefits in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, and used the benefits to stock a Mexican restaurant and collect the profits. In December, federal authorities charged two Haitian nationals in a $7 million trafficking scheme to collect SNAP food benefits from a Boston storefront. In both cases, U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts Leah Foley blamed Governor Maura Healey's administration for lack of enforcement of the program. Quote, federal officials have indicated that some of these schemes were not referred by Massachusetts agencies, underscoring gaps in detection and reporting, the GOP senators wrote in the demand for oversight hearings. The lawmakers also cited investigations by the State Auditor's Bureau of Special Investigations that have uncovered more than $34 million in public benefits fraud over the past three fiscal years, with SNAP fraud accounting for a majority of the graft in every year. Quote, taken together, the BSI's multi-year findings, the whistleblower's detailed account of internal dysfunction, the federal government's discovery of large-scale fraud schemes, and the conflicting statements regarding referrals to federal authorities, these developments present a clear pattern of systemic vulnerabilities that warrant immediate legislative oversight, they wrote. But the Healey administration has pushed back on claims of lax enforcement in the federally funded program, formerly known as food stamps, and claims it has robust measures in place to detect and prevent public benefits fraud. President Donald Trump's administration has threatened to cut off federal funding for Democrat-run states if they do not provide proper oversight of SNAP benefit payments. The crackdown comes in response to allegations that a group of Somali immigrants defrauded Minnesota taxpayers of more than $1 billion through the state's Medicaid program. In Massachusetts, more than 1.1 million people received benefits from the program, which provided $2.6 billion in funding in 2026, according to the Healey administration. The distribution of SNAP benefits in November was delayed by a 43-day shutdown of the federal government amid partisan bickering in Congress over extending expiring Affordable Care Act enhanced tax credits. Tarr's office said the GOP senators hadn't received a response as of Thursday afternoon. Next up is this article by Matt Petrie titled Parker River Wildlife Refuge Hoping for New Faces at Annual Volunteer Training. The Parker River Wildlife Refuge in Newburyport is hoping to bolster its volunteer numbers this weekend as it prepares to host its annual volunteer training day. The training is set to begin at 10 a.m. Saturday. Quote, we have a wonderful volunteer program here at the refuge, Refuge Visitor Services Manager Ella Weber said. The training's about 1 hour long. It'll be right here at our visitor center in the auditorium, and then there's an optional refuge tour afterwards. Volunteers are vital to the refuge's operation, she said. Quote, volunteers support basically every activity between biological programs, helping with removal of invasive species and shorebird monitoring, to visitor services, doing programs, and assisting with school field trips that make it possible for us to bring as many students as we do for free to the refuge, Weber said. They also help with maintenance projects such as fixing up boardwalks, helping with mowing, and snow removal. Quote, just about everything we do here, we have a small core staff, and the volunteers support all of those activities, Weber said, so it makes our work possible. Tim Corcoran, who has been volunteering at the refuge for over 3 years, shared why he feels people should get involved. Quote, I think if you have an appreciation for our area and preserving natural habitat for the wildlife that we all enjoy so much, and in some cases the outreach to the community, he said, it's a great combination of being exposed to nature and raising awareness of the importance of the habitat. The training will be aimed at new volunteers, though all volunteers are welcome. Quote, we'll go over the basics of the Fish Wildlife Program and Parker River, Weber said. Following that, she said trainers will go into what to expect. So what you might encounter in the field, Weber said, basics of working with the public, some of the structure of our program, you know, if you're a maintenance volunteer, how do I check in? Where do I find tools? Just those types of 101. She said they will also discuss the different volunteer activities available that they might be interested in signing up for. Quote, and then specifically things that already have dates on the calendar where we're looking for help, Weber said. The refuge was established in 1941 and today consists of more than 4,700 acres of diverse upland and wetland habitats. The habitats support varied populations of resident and migratory wildlife, including more than 300 species of birds and additional species, according to the Parker River website. It reports more than 315,000 annual visitors, according to the refuge's 2025 to 2030 Visitor Services Action Plan. Recently, the refuge has been collaborating with local partners, hosting ACE's First Waste Workshop on February 11th, and partnering with Joppa Flats for the Merrimack Eagle Festival over the weekend. For many volunteers, Weber said this is often their first time working with the public. Quote, so we talk about what to expect, types of frequently asked questions they might encounter when they're out in the field, she said. Folks who may be worried they do not have the proper knowledge about the refuge to volunteer have no reason to fear. Quote, they can totally pick it up as they go, Weber said. So we have some volunteers who come in with special expertise that they're interested in sharing as a volunteer. So, for instance, a lot of our field trip volunteers are retired teachers, and that's wonderful. But we have some folks who come in totally fresh, and they're just interested in learning something new. While folks can simply show up, they are encouraged to register at bit.ly/ParkerRiverSignup. This next article is written by Bobby Grady, titled, No Bluefin Blowout This Summer. Organizers looking for new management. The annual Bluefin Blowout Tuna Fishing Tournament in Gloucester will not be returning this summer, but its organizers are looking to pass the torch to anyone interested in keeping the event alive. Quote, at its core, it's a fishing tournament, but it's become a lot more than that. It's become a community-level event, a community-wide event that we're so proud and honored to have hosted and organized, said Lion Wow Auto Group Marketing Director Sedalia Schwartz. Schwartz and the Lion Wow Auto Group is stepping away as the tourney's organizers because the event has become too big to manage while overseeing 7 car dealerships. The tournament, based at Cape Ann Marina, 75 Essex Ave, attracted anglers as near as Gloucester and New England as far as to the West Coast. Quote, for us to be able to provide the same level of community service, care, and organization that we've been doing for so many years is difficult, Schwartz said. At some point, we just have to close the chapter on it because it will consume all of our time. The Lion Wow Auto Group has been the tournament's main sponsor since 2011 and took over its organization in 2014. Gloucester resident Warren Wow, managing partner for the Lion Wow Auto Group, said in a statement that should someone else take over the management of the Bluefin Blowout, his group would continue to sponsor the event. The tournament began as an idea scratched out on a bar napkin by founders Drew Hale and Rob Bowley, and it eventually grew into the biggest bluefin tuna tournament in the world, attracting fishermen from near and far and bringing thousands of people into Gloucester for a multi-day celebration. The tournament grew from the initial 30 participating boats in 2011 to last year's event that included 118 boats. Last year's event also saw fishermen reel in 15 tuna, totaling 7,686 pounds. Quote, I don't think we expected to get this big, but it always comes back to the Gloucester community. It's unlike anyone else, Schwartz said. And I'm not surprised it got this big because the community is just that big. We couldn't have done it without them. Once the auto group took over the event, it began raising money for the Alzheimer's Association. In total, the tournament raised $2.6 million for the association to support its mission of helping those with Alzheimer's and their families, a cause close to the organizers. Quote, Warren's wife Liz passed on from Alzheimer's, and that was a cause very near and dear to Warren, Schwartz said. We found that more and more people in our community were challenged with the same disease. According to Schwartz, there have not been any inquiries to take the event over yet, but she is confident the auto group will get some. Anyone interested in taking over the event's organization should reach out to Schwartz at cschwartz@lionwow.com, spelled at lionwaugh.com. And with our last couple minutes, we'll end off with the TGIF What's Up This Weekend column. So we have the Year of the Horse Festival. Celebrate the Lunar New Year 2026 at the Peabody Essex Museum at 161 Essex Street in Salem, where this Saturday and Sunday you'll find amazing Chinese art and performances, plus a scavenger hunt and tours of the museum's Yin Yu Tang House, a stately Qing Dynasty 16-bedroom home. Learn all about it at pem.org/yin-yutang-a-chinese-home. Celebrate the Lunar New Year, Sunday, 1 to 4 p.m., free and open to all hosted by the North Shore AAPI Coalition in partnership with the North Shore Community Development Coalition at 96 Lafayette Street in Salem. A great family-friendly way to welcome the Year of the Fire Horse with music, crafts, and food. Black History Month concert this Saturday at 7 p.m. at Salem's Tabernacle Congregational Church, UCC, 50 Washington Street. A 17-piece North Shore concert band celebrates Black history and culture with the kind of music American Black culture is world-famous for. Also, Rebel at Larcom. Tom Petty fans, this one's for you. A tribute concert with hits like Free Fallen and American Girl, played like Petty played them, this Saturday at 8 p.m. at Beverly's Larcom Theater at 13 Wallace Street in Beverly. Tickets and more information at thelarcom.org/rebels. And that is all the time we have for today's reading of the Salem News. Once again, this was the February 20th edition. Thank you so much for listening to the Talking Information Center, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.